You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
"90 Day Soulmate" is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions, where you can get your step-by-step, easy-to-follow, simple plug-and-play plan to take you from where you are to where you want to be in 90 days. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're going to be talking about 90 Day Soulmate. A lot of people ask us a little bit about the book every once in a while. Why did you write it? What's in it? And what have you? Well, the best way for us to address that is, like, let's just look at one of the chapters, for instance, and see what's inside the book. And we'll discuss why we put it in there. I think it's important because we were both through many, many relationships before meeting each other. So having that experience and then studying about relationships afterwards when we wrote the book and then after writing the book, we learned a great deal. For number one, to begin things off, is we just flew in from Europe, and boy, are our arms tired.
Yeah.
Old joke, but we're kind of out of it. My one ear is still stuffed.
10 hours in the plane.
10 hours in the plane with two kids sitting in one chair right next to me, giggling the whole time for a 10-hour flight.
Nice. So, nice.
Yeah, it was nice. Anyway, getting back to the book, because that's what you're tuned in for, so this is chapter 5. It's called Looking in the Mirror. So if you've dated for a while, you've no doubt run into a small or large misconception of the other person, misrepresentations that they've made or you've made in your mind about them, broken illusions. It's easy to project qualities onto a new person. Why? Why is it?
Because I guess that you see yourself in others.
You see yourself in others. You know, that reminds me of an experiment we did once. Do you remember this experiment?
No, I don't know where you're going.
We were in a library. We had a little group of people, and we were conducting an experiment where we had one person face towards the back of the room, one face towards the front of the room. The person at the front of the room was looking at pictures on the screen. And they were to write down on a piece of paper the emotion that came to mind when they saw that picture on the screen. The person looking at them but not looking at the picture on the screen was to write down the emotion that they think the other person had when they looked at that picture. So we're talking about the major emotions: sad, happy, angry, disgust, contempt. Mm-hmm. We hit most of those. And the funny thing was, is that we did it once in that direction. We flipped the class around and did it the other way. The people who wrote down their emotion, what they felt when they saw the picture, the people who looked at their face were not that correct in the emotion that the person wrote down on paper. So someone watching the other person's emotion misjudged it. But what was really interesting is when you took the responses, when they flipped around, they more accurately represented their own response to seeing the picture later. So when they saw someone's face looking at the picture, and they had no idea what was on the wall, they were actually accurately predicting how they would feel when they saw that picture. So when they were judging how they thought someone felt, they misjudged. But when they were in the same position as the other person, the emotion that they felt was what they guessed when they were looking at the other person. So we don't know. One of two things happened here. One is they are just misaccurately representing, you know, what's sad, what's happy when they see someone's face. They're reading their own emotion into it and thinking someone's responding a certain way. Or perhaps when they see the picture, that's the facial expression they put on their face when they see that picture, meaning they think someone's happy because when they see that person in that person's face, they see what they look like when they're happy, and they assume it's happiness. It's very, very interesting. So the mirroring meaning, let's try to simplify this whole thing.
Yeah, please.
Is that sometimes when we see somebody's emotions, if we're not trained to pick up on micro expressions and we're not really in tune with them, if we're just meeting them at the beginning, we're reading our emotion into their face. So if their face is basically a blank canvas, if we're happy at the moment, we think they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a large study that was put together based upon this as well, which had an actor in a film go through a series of scenes. And at the end of the movie, there is a scene with their face, and it was an emotionless face. But the people who saw the film saw different versions of it. And one version, it was really, really sad, like the dog got really old and passed away. And then you saw the person's face, the actor's face. And most people who saw the actor's face said, oh, they're sad. Then another one, the dog recovered and was running around with the family. And then they saw the actor's face, again, emotionless face. And they said, oh, the actor's happy. So it was the emotion of the person looking at the other person that they were writing down, not actually what the other person felt. Why is this so important? Because the misconception and misrepresentation is we put our own feelings, we judge other people based upon how we feel. You know, you go to the office in the morning.
Like you complain with the child. Maybe you are. They make a noise in the
it plane. It is. I was making all sorts of noises when their parents weren't looking. I was going, wah, wah.
So that's what you project.
I had headphones on, too. And okay. It was like still that little.
So what happened in the office?
So in the office. You go into the office in the morning and you see somebody. And maybe you had a bad weekend and you go in. And then you get into the office and you're like, everyone's upset at me today. I don't know why. Or you had a really good weekend, you come in and go, everyone's happy with me. I don't know why. But the whole point is it's you. So don't misread your own emotion on the face of others. But try to put your, if you want to be happy, try to have happiness with that other person. And ask them, are you happy? How are you doing? Like, hey, you know, you're enjoying this. Of course, that doesn't mean they're not going to lie. Right? So people at the beginning of the relationship may not tend to tell the truth as much because they just want to be with someone else.
Yeah. Promotion time.
So what if you can save yourself from these situations by starting out right? So that's part of the book. In a relationship, if you really know yourself and you've gone through the exercises in this book, you know deeply how you feel about certain situations. If you knew the same information about the other person, hey, where did you grow up? What was your family life like? You know, how were your parents with you? Did you have siblings? If you learn the codes by which that other person has grown up and lived, you know, past relationships, everyone brings a big encyclopedia with them mm-hmm. when they go into a relationship of past experiences. You mentioned that in the book, or we do.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I try to be in the point, but
it can go on, but you can pick anything here. Here you go. Everyone enters a relationship with a book under their arm, full of past experiences, personal history, failed relationships, happy relationships, and they go in with those expectations.
And the next part, I always say the 50-50 energy is about how you, by this kind of the feeling and the emotion, you create a new emotion with your partner. So the energy that you have with the energy I have. In some moment, we create something different that maybe you don't have with your past relationship or my past relationship.
And that's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that we talk about in the same chapter is the expectation that you bring to that relationship sets up that 50-50 energy, meaning that you will relate to that other person based upon your expectations. So if you don't think they're meeting your expectations, or you're like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, well, perhaps it wasn't what they represented. It was what you brought to the relationship and what you thought they represented, and the illusion of who they were or would be in this relationship. And because you brought that, you can't say, oh, it's them, they've misrepresented themselves, even if it's a playa.
Yeah, well, and the other part important that I did in one seminar is I remember that I put the title when the woman in the house is happy, when the woman is happy, the house is happy, or the home is happy. And this is feel responsible in the relationship to bring harmony and good feeling in the relationship. If you I understand you have bad day at the day, but in the moment that you have this bad day, you have to analyze, this is in my office, why I bring the bad day to home? So why I not close the door of the office, coming home, I enjoy the dinner and forget what happened in the office. But if you bring the problem, and maybe the person in home have other problem too, so you increase something that maybe it's not real problem. It's just mixing emotions. So when you are aware, you have your outer observation, you say, you know what, this is here, and we can bring a new energy and harmony.
Harmony. But, it's how you approach that relationship and the exchange of information, and trying to not approach it with preconceived emotions or emotions that were built on something else. The movie that you just saw before coming home, was it a happy movie or was it a sad movie? And did you bring that into the home? So I had a bad day at work, and now I come home and I immediately think Lizette's angry at me because I was stressed at work, and now I just see stress all over her, but it's actually me who's stressed. And what happens as we mirror each other's emotions, because the human being is a natural mimicker. We mimic each other very, very well. And that's something I think we don't know, we fail to understand. One of the reasons we've survived as a species so well is that we quickly learn from others by mimicking them, what they do in movement, facial expression, how they do things. So if we emotionally come into a situation, we're already set up. We have a context of the meeting, and we already are like that, and we then mimic each other, and so we bring anger, and now we are angry, but there's really no reason for it, but we brought it with. So the 50-50 energy is know this.
I remember one example I do with you. So for example, clean the dishes. So I start to clean the dishes, and you immediately start to help me. I not say anything. But when I travel, the dishes stay almost 2 or 3 days.
But they're clean like 5 minutes before you get here. they all go in the dishwasher and get cleaned. Magically.
Magically, yeah.
But when we come back after this break, we're going to talk more about dishes and wishes between couples. A 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Right back after this. Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
So we were talking about wishes and dishes and different things here about how we act differently by ourselves or together or in a relationship. Something that we saw in that same chapter during the break was if you have to talk to an ex, it, as soon as you think about it, it can bring up bad memories or good memories. It can immediately change your state. And whether that you're talking to that person or thinking about that person, and then all of a sudden you're talking to your current relationship, you've just brought that emotion to your current relationship. The human brain is a magnificent machine. We potentially, everything we see, everything we experience, especially when it has emotion attached, the most memorable experiences of our life or lives typically is when there's a very intense emotion, maybe pain, maybe an injury, but there's emotion and something, a happy birthday where you got some wonderful gift and your whole family got together. You had a very terrible breakup with somebody. You were in an automobile accident, something that was tragic, emotional, a loved one gets sick. That these things are very easy to remember because they form very strong memories, physical, mental. Like if you've ever seen that, you can anchor memories by physically doing things with your body, having the emotion and having the thought at the same time. The good news about that is we can remember a lot of stuff. The bad news about that is we can remember a lot of stuff. And we bring that stuff wherever we go, and things will trigger our memory. And it could be Lizette uses a word that was used in the past in a different relationship that was in the middle of an argument I had with that person, and she uses the word, and we've never used that word before, and it just triggers that emotion. And I think, oh, you've been talking to an ex or something. The memories of what we bring, the immediate sour taste. Mm-hmm. If we realize that and realize that we need to approach the other person with a clean slate, or we want to approach the other person with what we want for that relationship. So this relationship, I want these things. So I think in the book, we talk about the 50 things, 50, 40.
Yeah,
the 40 things.
And one important part is because we, like you say, your memory create patterns. So if your ex-boyfriend maybe don't like to watch cartoon, and then you love to watch cartoon, and then one moment you make a comment about, oh, I don't like cartoon, immediately your mind tricking and say, feeling that this person is your past relationship.
Okay.
So that is also the point, how the trigger some behavior, some attitude, they make a match in the new relationship, but it isn't you, it's not the person. It's how you see the person or the situation and how you also handle, because I can mix this with the sabotage relationship, when then you figure out the person, maybe the same person in the past, you feel scared, you afraid, and then you create some drama situation. So sometimes maybe it's not real.
It's not real, but because it was linked to something that bothered you, you mm-hmm. then immediately take all that bother and you put it on the other person, rather than being a ghost of a past relationship that you've just brought it and not realizing that that's what it is. You
and
now
also
put it on the
new
other person.
The new person is innocent because yeah. What happened? So what happened with, say, watching cartoon?
So, but I want to go to that is that this is used positively and negatively throughout our whole lives. If you look at marketing, if you've ever watched, and this goes back, you know, years ago, who was the Michael J. Fox, who most of you probably don't even know, but Michael Jackson you probably have heard of. Michael Jackson used to do commercials for Pepsi. And, you know, he would be paid a lot of money to walk around on stage with what is it called, a can of Pepsi. And then Michael J. Fox, who was a very big actor back when we were little, he also did Back to the Future 4 or 5 times. But he did Diet Pepsi commercials. If you really were fans of Michael J. Fox and really a fan of Michael Jackson and others who they put into these types of commercials, you would see them with Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, Pepsi, Diet Pepsi. Now you go to the store and you see Pepsi, Diet Pepsi. You don't think of Michael Jackson and Michael J. Fox. I don't know. Do they just pick Michaels for some reason here? But the positive feelings that you have of Michael Jackson, Michael J. Fox, or whomever the celebrity was that they used in the ad, those positive feelings are now in that Pepsi can. And you see that and you go, oh, I want to buy that. Because you've now linked the positive experience, even though it's subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing, is that Diet Pepsi can or that Pepsi can is when that person says cartoons. They say cartoons and you think, oh my gosh, I used to date Michael J. Fox. And we used to get into big fights because he hated that I watched cartoons. And so now you bring that with you. So going back to mimicking the brain and these memories is we need to, as soon as we have those feelings and they come to the surface, we have to understand, or even if they're underneath, we have to understand what triggered us and figure out how to separate that. How do you separate that?
And also how you reaction. So the way is, again, you need to have a really good our observation yourself versus the typical we observe our partner. So everything that your partner do, you make a criticize or complain versus that you see, hey, what I say, what I did, what kind of emotion I show, what kind of the body language is. Sometimes it's difficult because you don't see yourself, your face, or maybe your face say so much versus what also what you talk.
So going back to the 40 items, Lizette wrote 40 items that she wanted in a relationship. And they were all, I don't want to use the word positive things, but they were things that she would want to have as part of that relationship. And maybe it's good communication, maybe it's similar goals, you know, whatever they would be, these are the things you want in the relationship. And one of the reasons to do that is that if you have a really good structure as what you want as part of that relationship, and you have that filled up with, these are the things I want in it, it makes keeping things out of it easier. If you have no idea what you want in your relationship, then you'll just dump everything into it. You'll dump all those old memories. You'll take those books of past relationships and say, here, they're in my new relationship now. So there's an old expression about you want to take care of your garden. Your garden is what you plant. You need to pull the weeds. But if you only pull weeds and you never plant things, nothing will grow. So you want to do both. Plant the seeds that you want in your relationship and make sure you're removing the weeds that would get in and destroy that relationship.
And also, that is include effort. So, you know, figure out that you have a relationship and you go to the hammock and waiting for enjoy. You have to work in day by day, like the plant, put the water, put the fertilizer, light, sun, temperature of the room. So all the detail is important.
So I showed Lizette something that I saw on, I don't know if it was TikTok, Facebook, a reel somewhere, but it was a woman and a man, and they were just both on a talk show, and I don't know if they were, one was the host and one was a guest, or, but the woman made a comment. She said, the man has to be able to handle a woman like me. And she was very proud to be very strong, very opinionated, very tough. Like, you got to be able to handle a woman like me. That's what I'm looking for. And when I first started to hear the guy's reaction, I'm like, oh my, he's mean. But then as I thought about it more, he actually made some good points. And at some point, we'll give credit to whoever this was, but whoever it is out there, raise your hand. The gentleman said, hey, if I'm working and you're working and we come home from work, I don't want to have to figure out how to fix the relationship to take care of somebody who's difficult to have a relationship with. I want somebody who wants to be in a relationship, somebody who wants a positive communication system, somebody who takes care of me that I can take care of. I don't want somebody I have to handle, somebody I have to fix, somebody I have to be on edge. If I say the wrong thing, they're going to snap. But he said this with a lot more emotion, conviction, and I would say energy than I just did. But when I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. We shouldn't be looking for someone who can handle someone like us. There's a beautiful piece, again, in 90 Day Soulmate, which talks about we are all puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. And by doing self-observation, who we are, what we like, what we dislike, what we want in a relationship, what we were willing to give, what our home life was like, we figure out what we are, what puzzle shape we are. And once we figure that out, we can actually recognize a puzzle piece that fits with us. The difficulty is that people try to go into relationships without knowing who they are or being upfront or transparent with the other. Oh, this is what it was. Recognizing past patterns. Mm-hmm. That if you do not actually understand your past patterns, why do you keep getting into the same bad type of relationship? If you don't understand what you're attracted to, and we've discussed this, is that sometimes somebody may be attracted to somebody who's really strong and they're loud and they joke around and I'm really attracted to that because when I first meet somebody, I want somebody who's going to approach me and talk to me and I want to have that strong person. But then I feel like as the relationship goes on, I feel like they always are strong and they're never listening to me. And sometimes I have to say, maybe I'm only recognizing this strong person because if somebody's not strong like that, I don't even see them as a possible relationship. Somebody who would actually fit me like a puzzle piece is not giving that type of behavior up front because I've never actually figured out how to find somebody that I'm actually just good with, being with that person, developing a relationship together.
Yeah, and so you say one point, if you like somebody strong, but and then when he's strong, you feel bad. Is it part of you like somebody strong? So you need to see how much you can agree and accept this person versus the... Maybe you feel love, but you feel challenged. Maybe you find somebody more passive, more calm, and you don't feel this attraction.
Right.
But you feel relaxing. So that is the point of how you know what you want first in a relationship.
And I think if we go back to evolutionary psychology or development over years, is that a lot of times, and I'll say women or men, doesn't really matter, we may be attracted to the thing that is the brightest, the most loud, from a standpoint of guys, it's the strongest lion gets to mate, where the weaker ones kind of wander off. But the strongest ones may mate, but then wander off to mate again and mate again and mate again. Whereas maybe the weaker ones in human life now, maybe the ones that aren't and I go back to players, aren't the animals, maybe they're not the one we're naturally, evolutionarily attracted to. You know, that the person who actually is best for us to be with may need to develop that relationship over time. It's not something like that. You're like, oh, look at them. They're so attractive. It's the mind attracts slowly, where the chemical part of our physical body attracts quickly. Now, it's great when you have both, but you need to know who you are in order to allow the mind to have the attraction. Physically, we can be attracted to many, many different people.
Is that the moment when this attraction coming down and maybe the real love is support this? If you don't have this real love, and for me, the real love is coming from how you mind program what is relationship, mm-hmm. how you grow in your home and you figure out that is love. Also, we using the is a little tough example, but when the family have aggression, abuse, yeah. relationship. So some partners hitting in the night, but in the morning the woman make the coffee and everything is good. So the child grows, say, okay, this is love. You can hit in the mama, but you stay together because that is the relationship. So that is the way that some people stay in some kind of toxic relationship, right. because don't have the knowledge to figure out what is the real or normal environment for have.
And I'll say, what is the normal environment?
That's the key point.
Yeah, there is really no state of normal. There's a state of many variations where there's an average, and that average we say is normal. Not too aggressive, not too passive, not too much this way, not too little that way. And we say, based upon all that, this is normal. And we're all outliers to normal in some way. We have...
I guess the way that you can live and peace with yourself is the way that how you can keep in the relationship.
And I wanted to go to the end of the chapter because usually we have something at the end that says, here we go. So we talked about the misrepresentations or illusions at the beginning of that chapter. Well, at the end, some red flags that you'll notice in this type of relationship where if you are mismatched, if you're not having a 50-50 energy, if you're putting in 100% energy and they're taking all that energy and kind of just not adding back, or if you're in the position where you're like, I just have no more energy for this, is that a red flag is you are calling more often than the other. You're the one. You're calling. You're sending emails. You're sending text messages, and you're not getting any back. Or you're calling, and the other person doesn't answer your calls, but they'll shoot you back a little text message that just says, hi, thinking of you. Oh, they can't go out during the evening, but call late at night. And we talked about this as just a general red flag, is are they really available for a relationship, or are they just kind of stringing you along until you figure out that they're already in a relationship?
Yeah, but the point is to be aware of the feeling, attitude.
Be aware of the feelings, attitudes, and actions reflected from your soul. Then you can share this authentic suit to attract your soulmate. Self-observation gives you the feeling and attitudes that you have, the values you have, your beliefs you have. And when you're aware of those, and those are what you wear on your surface, you'll attract somebody who sees that as attractive. Not just that you have a pretty face and a little beard, and small glasses, but that they see that maybe you are... You can recognize the situation, or you can see what you've done wrong and apologize and move on to the next step. That you don't have to put on a fake suit every time you go out on a date.
And also this fake suit is again when you don't know what you want. I have a friend that she say that she really is scared for her relationship, but she want relationship.
Right.
So you go outside to the game, but you dressing like the, okay, I am attractive, I am happy, but I don't want to go serious relationship. And the other person smell that. Mm. I say, oh, it's fun. She's the person that like to be in the party, but I don't want to have long relationship, so she project and dress in this, and then the person believe that. What happened in this third or fourth dating, she wants something serious. But the person read that she is a party
So she takes off the party dress and puts on sweatpants and says, let's go bowling. And the person goes, what?
Yeah. And then she got it. She's dressing like this because she's scared to have serious relationship. And then she jumping and sabotage.
So sometimes it's, and I was just thinking as you were saying that, it's like I remember when I was looking for my first job. Mm-hmm. And you go on the job interview and you have your suit on and your tie on and, you know, you put cologne on, you comb your hair because I had hair back then, clean shaven, and you show up early, you have a little briefcase and you walk in and you're trying to make the best presentation of yourself. But you know nothing. You don't know anything about the job. You have no experience and you're trying to give the best presentation you can based upon how those first 6 seconds go when they first see you. That's like dating. If you show up and you show up as a suit, an empty suit, with no experience, with no showing who you really are, and I think the showing of who you really are is having an idea of what you like, what you dislike, and being able to share it. And then, you know, that's the opposite of when you've got 10 years of experience in a job.
And you know what you want.
You know what you want. You go into the interview and you ask a few questions and you have a conversation and you see how it fits with that job.
And also you can say, maybe it's not good for me. Right. And I'll keep going or move forward with this. Yes.
So we're suggesting you do the same thing when you're meeting that new person, is that you go in with the experience of who you are. You have that conversation of, does this person fit? Do you want to hang out with them? Because you know what? You're going to be physically attracted to a dozen different people. And, it matters. But what really matters is, does your experience match their experience? Do you have the same goals for the future? Can you see yourself developing a more intimate relationship that leads to long-term attachment, if that's what you want? If you just want to go out dating every weekend and partying, go ahead. There's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. And be clear, because maybe you have collateral damage to other person.
Be clear with the person and let them know, hey, I just want to date a little bit. And if things work out, great. And if not, they don't. But I'm not really looking for a long-term relationship right now. If one happens, great. But being clear up front.
Yeah.
you say to your partner, hey, you know what? I would love to date you. I'm not looking for a long-term relationship for the next 5 years. And then within a year, you're married. I don't know what happens.
Oh, my potion work.
But we're going to call it a day here at 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
And thank you for watching. I feel like I'm all stuffed. I don't know if I sound that way, but
I hear you.
Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you next time here on 90 Day Soulmate.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.